You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's a cheeky one. Square! And smashed in! Kiefer Moore! A brilliantly worked set-piece! Skullduggery and winkery! Kiefer Moore! 1-0!
The narrative on AFC Bournemouth is a-changing. Welcome to Back of the Net. Do you remember in January? We were tin pot. Gary O'Neill should be sacked. Bournemouth just keep on losing. Fast forward to April. Cherries have spent massively. Gary O'Neill, though, he's a genius. He deserves so much credit for keeping them up. June. Getting rid of O'Neill was ludicrous. It's a scandalous decision. I hope they get relegated. September. Iraola is awful. Gary O'Neill's thriving at Wolves. I'm so glad Bournemouth are getting their just desserts. December. Andoni is amazing. Cherries are making waves. It could be manager of the month. What a rollercoaster 2023 it's been for AFC Bournemouth. This is the year of you. My name's Sam Davis.
My name's Tom Jordan.
And it's been a crazy one, isn't it?
Well, summarised, mate.
Thank you very much. At the start of the year, Bournemouth, we were pretty awful. Yeah. We were losing games week after week. And then December, we're looking up rather than down. It's crazy. Fair to say, in the space of that time, some media views on us have changed.
Yeah, I would have thought so, mate. It's been a roller coaster. And yeah, as you say, from the media, they've been consistently inconsistent in their views on us as well. It's been a really strange one. And the style of football, what we're watching, results, everything has just changed constantly. So yeah, really interesting year, but ultimately a successful one.
Absolutely. We're going to wind back to January, and it started off with a 3-0 loss at Manchester United. We were knocked out of the cup. We were beaten soundly at Brentford, and then we scraped a draw at home to Nottingham Forest. Sam Surridge getting the equaliser. At the start of that month, Bournemouth were 15th in the league after the first game, but some of the football we were playing was difficult to watch.
Yeah, it was a difficult month, wasn't it? So for context, it was obviously because it was the World Cup. So he was in interim charge before then, and we looked all right. And then we tailed off a little bit, and then he surprisingly, from Bournemouth fans' perspective, got the job permanently to the end of the season. And he got given the job. And then after the World Cup, it was absolutely horrendous, wasn't it? And suddenly we were thinking, as you say, after that month of January, going into the year, we thought, right, we're in real trouble here, because every game we're looking like, you know, we're barely having any shots. Mm. We're not getting many points, and it was a worrying trend at the start of the year, mate, for sure.
And I think the YouTube thumbnails at the time are probably indicative of how we're feeling. Look at this, Tom. Stick or twist. Fans were calling the Cherries clueless as we got knocked out of the cup. And we were saying it was a toxic terrace at Brentford. I certainly remember that. And pressure was certainly mounting on Gary O'Neill. But we're Bournemouth. we tend to stick together, right? Yeah. But do you remember this was where the month where the memes were starting to come in, and it really wasn't a good place on social media. Gary was up against it and he needed some help. And the board certainly gave him that with some new signings, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That was a big, big moment, wasn't it? Because as you say, just going back on them games, I remember Burnley in the Cup was really bad, toxic. The other things with Louis Kelly as well, remember? Started like filtering onto the players and the captain. And then Brentford away, I remember, yeah, it really got a little bit nasty in the crowd in terms of, you know, not being happy what we're seeing. But then as you say, we needed help. We knew we're at least, you know, we're in January and we might be able to get some bodies in to help us at least. And we did that. I mean, ultimately, some of the ones didn't actually, you know, come in and play straight away. People like, you know, Zabarnis, who's ended up being really, really good, didn't come in straight away. But, you know, we had Dango Ouattara and Hamed Traore and a few bodies in that, you know, was hoping that it could just do us enough to get over the line and get to the finish line. And we're obviously going to stick with Gary to do that. And yeah, ultimately, as we'll find out, it worked.
Yeah, it certainly did. So in February then, let's go through to that. And it was a unfortunate, I would say, 1-0 loss away at Brighton and Hove Albion. And then we got a draw against Eddie. I mean, we never lose to Eddie Howe's Newcastle in the league, do we? But then a win at Wolves. And I think Gary Neil's got some kind of record now looking back at it that he's unbeaten at Molineux. And then 4-1 against Manchester City, which you can kind of expect and appreciate. But
Wolves was big though, wasn't it? I didn't even think we played very well in the game. But Tavernier scored a really good goal. I think we mentioned there about the transfer stuff. That was big. Tav coming back to fitness, wasn't it? He was key for us, as we'll find out. But yeah, I remember that Wolves away felt massive. I didn't see us going there and winning with the form and the way we were playing. And it was a really big one. Really big 3 points to go there and win, keep a clean sheet. And yeah, the City game's the City game. But that gave us a bit of confidence moving into March, I think.
Yeah, so it was a month where we actually started in 19th place in the league. So those 4 points during that month certainly helped. On our YouTube channel, well, we had a number of videos where we were saying, would patience pay? Mm. We were also analysing the Brighton game where we're just saying make it make sense. We thought some of the decisions in the game were insanity.
I think we were 0-0 playing all right and he went to about 5 and then we conceded, didn't we? I think it was Vigna's first game where he come on, and yeah, I vaguely remember us going to a back five when we looked all right. Yeah. And then was it Matoma scored at the back stick? So yeah, I think that's what we alluded to there. It was kind of the decision making in game was really baffling at times.
So then in March, look at where we were after the first game in March, rock bottom of the table. And this is where I suppose we struggled with this kind of narrative that, you know, Gary O'Neill came in and saved us almost instantly, because under him, we went into the relegation zone. Scott Parker didn't do that, but he took us down to 20th, but it was when things were starting to turn. We were putting in some pretty good performances, not least the first, 70 minutes at the Emirates when we played Arsenal, which was one of the games I look back on and think, if only.
Yeah, that was
if
a,
only.
And that was a good performance. That was one of the things.
Really good.
I mean, it was party atmosphere at Arsenal at the time and they were flying. So, yeah, you don't want to put too much on that. I thought we played really well. It was just a shame how we ended it. But we saw a few signs in that game that, you know, OK, we could score against the bigger clubs. You know, you never know against Liverpool. Mm. We've done it before at home and that was huge because it felt like a bonus 3 points against Liverpool. And that's where we saw some of the new signings as well. I think Dango Ouattara had a good game. Mm. And you're starting to think, oh, okay, you know, maybe they will help us and maybe, you know, we can get over the line. And a bit of a turning point as well. I think Salah missed his penalty. Mm. And when little moments like that happen, when you really are desperate for it, you think, oh, they're going to score a penalty now and it's all going to be ruined. And he missed it. And you think...
He's really not that good at penalties, is he?
I don't understand how he's on penalty still this day, to be honest with you. He's missed a few since. He actually missed against us again this season, but scored the rebound. Yeah. But yeah, that felt big. And yeah, Villa were too good for us. But yeah, little signs in there. Unfortunately, there were some teams around us that weren't doing much better. So it kept us in the hunt for sure.
It certainly was. On our YouTube channel, one of our most watched videos with 162,000 views was our vlog there, probably helped by the Arsenal fan giving me the finger from the tier above. But we did relive the agony on our channel, but then we also enjoyed the ecstasy of that Liverpool game, and we were wondering what that win actually told us. But Liverpool weren't great.
Liverpool were great, and obviously, like you say, it was hard because it was hard to back it up, because then you go to Villa Park, and obviously they were too good for us. quick mention, Villa Park was David Brooks.
Yes.
Got to mention that. Great year for him. He returned. So that was a nice touch. And I think we, you know, that was a really nice moment, you know, away from the football as such, just to see David Brooks back out there. But yeah, Villa was too much of a struggle. But I thought, you know, we've got a bonus win in there. So let's kick on into April now for a massive, massive month. And we had some big, big games in there. Unfortunately, as you'll see, that we managed to get some massive results.
Yeah, so after the first game in April, this is where we were in the table. Those points that we garnered in March helped to propel us up to 15th in the league. And it's fair to say we hit the ground running. I mean, look at those results that we got there. Okay, we won't look at the Brighton one, but 2-1 over Fulham.
That's big.
Tavernier, wonder goal.
Again, Tavernier. Again, massive moment. Like I say, he felt like a new signing when he was back from injury. Another massive moment from him, because I think we were one down at the break and we got two in the second half. That was really big. The win at Leicester was obviously a six-pointer.
It was huge. And that scoreline, I think, flattered Leicester because we were all over them all game. And
but the goal was... 1-0. Yeah, the goal was weirdly James Maddison assist, wasn't it? Billing snuck in there. And then again, another big bonus. Big bonus at Tottenham. I'm sure we'll mention this again in this video, but Tottenham away was absolutely superb. One that everyone will remember. So again, new signing, getting the winner.
Yeah, so what frustrates me, though, is this positive momentum that we got. And then we get beaten at home by West Ham United. But it's not just a cheeky 1-0. 4-0, that match was on the Sunday, wasn't it?
Yeah, and they were below us at the time.
Oh my God, and they absolutely ripped us a new one. They really did.
Yeah, and it felt like, as you say, it felt like we thought we'd, you know, got over the line with that kind of win at Tottenham. And then we, and it just put a load of pressure on the next two, didn't it? Two teams in the round us. It was three. We lost the first one at West Ham. Again, right, Southampton leads. 6 points is what we need. Mm. 6 points is what we got. And to beat them two as well was, it was really special. And they were two massive results and two massive wins and massive scenes. And that was the moment, I think, when we beat Leeds at home, where I thought, yes, it's done.
We would do videos like, Gaz, show us you've got this. We also showed the Bournemouth bedlam. We predicted that three teams were going down. Mm. Bournemouth were not one of them. Also, that last minute limbs. It was good to have a North London 3-2 that went on our side for once. And then some brilliant scenes at Southampton. Of course, against Leeds United, where Lerma scored a couple of goals. Of course, in that South Coast derby. And yes, it is a derby. It's where Che Adams equalised in the last minute, but didn't. Thanks to VAR, and one of the kind of loudest cheers
of the season,
akin to a goal.
I know, it was mad. That's what I always remember. I don't even remember the goal that well. I know it was Tavernier, wasn't it, again? But it felt like, that when that goal got chalked off, it felt like, we're going to be all right here. And I was confident going to the Leeds game. And it's not just because we've got that little bit of bite with Southampton and Leeds. They both went down. So how big was them? We just spoke about beating Leicester, Southampton and Leeds. They were the three that went down. They're the three big wins, mate. They were massive. I know we had the limbs at Tottenham and that, but them three, they were all massive six-pointers.
So we did a video called The Man Who Upset the Odds. And it was the Vegas gamble, we called it, that divided Bournemouth supporters. And let's be fair, it certainly did. But I think that kind of pulled us back together a little bit.
Yeah.
Some people were still agitated and angry at some of the comments aimed at Gary O'Neill, the GIFs, the memes. Mark McCadden was one of them that sort of let himself go a little bit on social media, where he did a tweet which, it laid in to some Cherries fans who were doing the Osama bin Laden, the clown photos and all that kind of stuff, posting pictures of his family that were completely out of order. And then I went to the pair to do an interview with him where he managed to put that tweet into a little bit of context.
Yeah.
So Bournemouth fans, I think, were relatively happy at that stage. And then if we actually look at the league tables at the start of May, Bournemouth were, we were pretty comfortable. Now, what got me, though, was after that Leeds game, Gary O'Neill pretty much said, we're safe, I think we're 39 points, we're all right. And then what followed was a series of results where Bournemouth didn't win anything at all. We didn't.
I just realised that you're about to do another month, and I thought, I thought we'd finished, because that's how many points we got. But it was hideous, wasn't it? It was absolutely hideous. Did we score a goal? Oh, yeah, we got one, Vigna.
Yeah, oh, that was right. Was that Chelsea?
Yeah,
that?
A really good goal, actually.
Yeah.
But Chelsea were pretty naff at the time for Chelsea. Obviously, I think they were about, you know, bottom half at that time. And we got beat quite comfortably. I think that was Frank Lampard's only win.
Yeah.
Against us. Went to Palace. We were absolutely atrocious at Palace. I don't think we had a shot on target. I think we were absolutely awful in that game. Lost to Man U and we were rubbish in that one as well. And then Everton on the last day. What could have been? Because, I mean, Everton were glad we didn't turn up, because not only did it keep them up, I think it saved them over Leicester.
Yeah.
If we had won, Leicester would have stayed up. It saved Everton, and obviously what ended up happening is them getting a points deduction.
Yes,
if they had had it in the Championship, Jesus. So, yeah, that obviously bundled into a lot of other narratives and stuff with Everton. But, yeah, we were rubbish in that last month, but we had done the job, fortunately.
Yeah, we had done the job, but it left us fans feeling a little bit confused. But largely, of course, we backed Gary O'Neill. The story on YouTube can be seen here. We did a video on how we proved YouTube wrong. So, loads of YouTube pundits. Oh, we've seen that tweet that Bournemouth put out at full time after survival was confirmed. That was after Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
And we also did a video about debunking Gary's Cherries exit as well. That's right. Gary O'Neill was relieved of his duties despite, check out the league table, despite leading them to safety and 5 points clear of the drop as well. But had we got a few results in May, we could have been looking at maybe 12th, 13th, and it's almost like the flip-flops were on, the speedos were on, the players were on the beach. But I suppose it was quite a mentally taxing year for the players, you could say. Losing one of their managers, having an interim, not knowing who the next manager would be, them thinking, oh my God, it's going to be this genius from Argentina, Marcelo Bielsa. Oh, yeah. And then all of a sudden, it's not. It's the guy we had amid the takeover as well.
Mm.
New players coming in, having to integrate them, learning what Gary O'Neill really wants to do. We didn't know, did they? Not too sure. And then at least when survival's confirmed, I think it's just like, oh, thank God for that.
Yeah, I do agree with that. And I think if we went back, I mean, I'm sure Gary's not more than that. He's got a really good job. But when he got relieved of his duties, I bet he thought, oof, I wonder if anything would have. I'm not sure if it would have. But if we had won every game in May, it potentially would have been hard to get rid of him. I do think that a lot of people say, well, we're on the beach. And I agree with that. But if you're in a relegation dogfight like we were before that, as players, you don't really need much motivation. You know that your wages are getting cut and you're potentially not going to be a Premier League player. It's enough motivation, isn't it?
Yeah.
That last month we got enough to play for, that's where your manager earns his money. Because you motivate players when there's nothing really to motivate them for. And he didn't. That's the fact of the matter. He didn't motivate them and the players weren't motivated and they were on the beach. So, yeah, it was a difficult final month for him. But he did do the job. Kept us in the league. As I say, we were just above relegation when he came in. He'd done unbelievable as interim manager, I felt. Looked like we were going to be absolutely fine. Got the job. It was really scary for a bit. But ultimately, the aim was to stay up. And he'd done that. And then the club, obviously, long-term admirers of Andoni Iraola, thought that this was the only chance we were going to get of being able to bring him in, and took a massive, massive gamble. Like they did by giving Gary the job, by the way. A massive gamble. Because they knew they would have got some heat for letting Gary go, because they probably thought he's done it before, he could probably keep us in the league. And I would say now, because people know that I wasn't exactly, you know, in awe of what Gary did, but do I think this season we would have stayed up if we had kept Gary? No, yes. Right. I think we had a good enough squad. I think he was a good enough manager to keep us up. But we saw a chance to progress even further. And yeah, you need to change stuff if you want to progress. And that's what we decided to do.
June the 19th was the day that O'Neill was relieved of his duties. Myself and Tom, we got together to do a live show, only knowing that news. And then it was during the show, we did a sort of 90-minute special, didn't we? It was live. So during the show, of course, we went over the news that was announced earlier that day. I think it was about 11 o'clock in the morning. We were live at like 12:30 or something.
Mm.
And then by 1 o'clock, we knew the name knew of a name that was being widely touted. I think we got a few live guests on during that discuss it, including Mark McAdam. And yeah, Andoni Iraola was the one. And let's face it, a name that we didn't really know too much about. I mean, we were on Wikipedia during the show thinking, you know, who is this guy? One person to his credit that knew a lot about him was Neil Dawson, that on the Vitals Forum has been touting this guy for a long long time. So we were learning about his football. We produced the video that debunked the Cherries exit, as we just mentioned. And that was one where we were looking at tweets from from Gary Lineker, from Richard Keys, from Darren Huckabee, amongst many others, saying how it was a scandalous decision. Mm. Fans saying, I hope they get relegated. And I suppose these
never
are the
been people, there before, have we?
Yeah. These are the people that have just watched Cherries from afar, do not go week in, week out, and don't have to, and I don't want to say this disrespectfully, but put up with the football that we had to put up with. And it, maybe that's a little bit harsh, but we didn't really know what we were. And Bill Foley is an owner that wants to take Cherries to the next level. He said that publicly. Mm. Was Gary O'Neill going to be that man? We don't know. It's a hypothetical situation, but we've seen via his CV, albeit in La Liga, that Iriola has done bits with Vallecano. So that's what we hope would translate. So we produced a video on, you know, 10 things we noticed. And then the signings were starting to come through the door, mate. I mean, Milos Kerkez, Max Aarons, and also a young lad from Bristol City that we'd been chasing for quite a while.
Yes, Alex Scott. Nice to see him turn up. But yeah, some really excited signings. And I think that was part of it as well. They were, I think Gary said in one of his interviews, it might have been on Monday Night Football, Gary Neil saying that they were the sort of players that he knew we were after. So maybe that was part of it, because they're quite, this is no disrespect, by the way, but these are quite exciting, kind of energetic, attack-minded players. And that's more Iriola's system. And, you know, Gary Neil is a little bit more pragmatic. So maybe that was why they felt they would fit with them a little bit more. As I say, I don't think there was, I think when we spoke to Mark McAdam on the live when O'Neill was let go, he kind of, you know, said, and we were both saying, and he kind of made the point that Bournemouth were quite content to go into the season with Gary Neil. He'd proven that he could keep us up, and that's always the minimum expectation. But they realised that a guy that they've been looking at for a while is available, and he might not be for much longer.
Yeah.
And they decided it was stick or twist, and they decided to twist. And as you say, mate, there was a lot of lazy kind of media stuff. The same sort of things that were said when we let Scott Parker go, by the way. I remember getting absolutely ridiculed when we went on Sky, saying I was relieved that Parker had gone after what he'd said. And people were going, oh, they're going to get relegated now. Could you be relieved just because they lost to Liverpool? They're definitely down now. Well, that didn't happen. And then they're having to go at us for when we got rid of O'Neill, they were annoyed that we got in over Parker. So, yeah, so it's a weird one. But in the end, worked out right. And I kind of get the reasoning for it now. And I think people are starting to get their head around it a little bit more. And that's without any real disrespect towards Gary O'Neill, weirdly, because I think it's just that we wanted to go in a different direction. Yeah. Gary O'Neill, to his credit, is proving that he could do a job in the Premier League. He's doing really well at Wolves. He should be thanking us, and Wolves should be thanking us, by the way, because it's worked out really well for both parties. And I think now, where start of the season we thought we'd both be in a dogfight, currently we think, oh, both Wolves are not really in a dogfight. So I can kind of enjoy O'Neill doing all right, because it doesn't bother me now. And it's good to see. And he never done anything. It was just what we were seeing on the eye, and with the players we had available, I thought, do we need to play this way when we've got all this attacking talent? Yeah. And that's what we're seeing now, mate.
So it has worked out well for both parties. And look, that was the 2022-23 season over and done with. But I've got a theory about Gary O'Neill, but you can find out next. So it was a big, big Christmas of festive football. But look, we're into January now, and there's plenty of Premier League action. There's going to be a little bit of a break, but then Bournemouth are going to be back with a bang. We've got Liverpool, and then some huge games coming up to the Cherries. If you can't get to Dean Court, and if you can't get to any away games, you know the best way to watch it, mate?
No, go on.
It's down at your local Green King pub, of course. Green King Sports Pub.
Mm.
So you've been catching up with your friends, old and new. Maybe you're making a New Year's resolution, are you? Are you doing Dry January? Well, if you're not, or even if you are, then pop down your Green King, because some refreshing drinks, delicious food, and some live action of every Premier League game televised on TV.
Yeah, no, exactly, mate. I haven't got a New Year's resolution, but if I did, it'd be to watch even more football. So every fixture from, I think it's TNT, Sky and Amazon now, is live at Green King Sport. So that means wall-to-wall action on their big screens. So head to your local Green King and watch every winning goal, top bins volley, a few dodgy VAR decisions in an atmosphere that's worth sharing.
And if you download the Green King Sports app as well, you'll receive 10% off drinks every single time there's sport on the telly. 20% if you get an outcome right on Score King.
It's good app, mate. I've done well off that.
Free drink if you get the score right. Download the app right now. So I've got this theory on Gary O'Neill.
No, here we go.
Right, you know, like when you split up with your girlfriend?
Here we go. Right. No, I haven't had one for 10 years.
And, you know, she gets with someone new.
Yeah.
Right. But also, like, you get with someone new as well.
Yeah.
So our Wolves fans, like, they're, you know, they're seeing this this new girlfriend that's come in. You always want to, like, even though you're happy for them because it's working out, and you're happy for you because you're getting results like being Manchester City, you Man always want to look better than them.
Oh, them, yeah, sorry, yeah.
And, like, you're always looking them up on Instagram, looking at their photos, like, comparing yourself a little bit. I think that we haven't really got that. We're not really looking at what Wolves is doing with any envy. I think it's great. It's brilliant. But we're happy for them. I don't think they're happy for us.
No, no.
Because,
no.
And they always want to be better than us. And look, the league table at the moment shows that they probably are
a
bit happier. But there's always that little bit of Schadenfreude that they would like to revel in if Bournemouth lose games when they don't.
Yeah, but I'm not going to lie either. I think they've had some really good results, and then they would throw away a lead because they bought in a defender. Mm. And I'd go, let's see, there's that argument she always used to do. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a little bit going, told you. Yeah, I did warn you about that little argument. She's all right. And you'll be fine. You'll be absolutely fine. But there'll be some bumps, guy. There will be some bumps. And yeah, I think it's football. I think now, as I kind of previously mentioned, I think now because we're both looking up the table, I think it's starting to, you know, starting to simmer a little bit because both teams are going, you know what, it's worked out well, hasn't it? I put a tweet the other day. I don't really understand what we're arguing about at this point. Gary O'Neill, we let him go, which, you know, he should be angry about. Then he gets a job at a bigger football club, by the way.
Yeah.
And he's doing quite well, and they're happy with him. So the Bournemouth fake up state. No, because they got a guy in and they're doing well. Exactly. Oh, so we're all happy. Let's all hug. Do you know what I mean? I don't really understand. But it'll be interesting, though, because there could easily be a situation where, say, for example, last few games, it's us and them 10th or 11th. Who's going to get top half? But I think now it's kind of more of a laugh because both teams are in a good position. It's worked out pretty well, mate. It has worked out well.
So let's check out August. And the Iraola revolution begins. And it was a 1-1 at home to West Ham to start the season. I think Jared Bowen scored a worldie.
Yeah. Rothwell era, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah. Dom Solanke snuck in to make it 1-1. But then when you look at the start of our season, look, Liverpool 3-1, Spurs as well. We did get a competitive win, his first competitive win against Swansea City in the Carabao Cup. But the opening set of fixtures, I mean, this is where it puts in the league, mate. I mean, we were happy with that. But the opening run of fixtures, we were always like, if we're not in the bottom three, we've done all right here. But for a new manager to come in face the kind of fixture schedule, it wasn't just August, it was September too.
Yeah.
You sort of felt from a little bit. So he was always going to be up against it, wasn't he, Iraola?
Yeah, I don't think there was any kind of concern at that point. I think we were all kind of, it was as expected. I think we look back and go, oh, even though West Ham are good now, that was just before they got the signings, like Ward-Prowse and Alvarez. And I thought, oh, we could have won that. It was a good goal from Bowen. But apart from that, I thought we performed well at Anfield. And obviously, we all remembered we lost their 9-0 the previous season. We performed well there. We were in the game and they got a penalty that I don't think was. And that kind of changed it a little bit. And then Tottenham were a really good start of the season and they were a little bit too good for us. But, you know, it wasn't all that bad. And I think we were all kind of like, oh, okay, this is what I expected. And, you know, let's just see what happens now. There was a little bit more front foot football. But I think you've also got to remember there were so many injuries. We just mentioned the West Ham game. It was a Rothwell era. Why was he playing? Because he had to be our defensive midfield player because all the new signings were bloody injured. I think James had to come on because Aaron's had only just started. True, and he had to come on in the game. It was, we're all a little bit over the place when we were signings as well. So it was a tough start.
Yeah, now it was during the game. So it was once the season had actually started, we then signed Tyler Adams as well. Yeah. So his 5-year deal was confirmed, but obviously we know what's happened to him in terms of limited availability. Limbs and lows it was at Liverpool. But we were showing little moments, weren't we?
Yeah.
Start
of that Liverpool game.
We were showing little moments within games that you know, did give us optimism.
Yeah.
But then we did go into the following month in September. And let's face it, that wasn't a particularly great month, we've got to say.
It wasn't, but we started it. It was a weird one because we went to Brentford, didn't we? And I thought that was a really, really good point. Really good point. I'd have taken a point before the game. Brentford are notoriously quite good at home. They'd already picked up a point against Tottenham at home. We were on fire. But the context of it was we'd seen it with like virtually the last kick.
It was that Milos Kirkus.
For an individual error again, which cost us in the opening game as well. So it was a weird one because I remember being devastated with a point. And it was a strange one. But again, there were positives. Solanke scored a good goal. Brooksy come on and got his goal, which was a nice touch. And we were showing that on the break we were causing problems.
Yes, agreed.
But we were letting him in too much, hit the post a few times. It was a tricky one. But it was a lot more end to end, and you thought, okay, it's still a positive point. We just want to tick off that first win if we can. Can we do it at home to Chelsea? Again, decent point.
Yeah, it was a decent point. We could have snatched.
Could have nicked it.
It was like Dom Solanke had a chance in front of the North Stand that keeper was safe.
Yeah, the keeper had a good game. But yeah, it was, again, you go, it's a good point. We just want to tick off that first win. And then, went into Brighton, didn't we? And again, started well.
Yeah, we had moments. Yeah,
we were playing really well. And then, again, a few little errors and stuff.
It was a low goal from Milos Kerkez, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it all changed again. Fortunately, we were still riding high in the cup, and then Arsenal were far too good for us, as we probably anticipated. So the results weren't that much different than we expected, really. We actually got three decent points.
Well, we were up on the equivalent games from the previous season, and that's one thing that we always, that was our narrative, I suppose, on back of the net, really, because obviously we want to be positive. We're not going to be wearing rose-tinted glasses, but we did think that we could see some signs, and this fixture schedule, we always knew it was going to be tough, but when you're in it, it's actually more difficult to handle mentally when you're actually in it. Whereas beforehand, you can say, well, if we've got 3 points at this stage, we'll be happy. We did have 3 points. And largely, I think we were unhappy. But it's because, I suppose, we saw these glimpses throughout the games. And it was just these individual errors.
And I also think that you thought, God, we're starting with a new manager. We've got on the fixture. Is this injury list is doing my head in. It was like, oh, give us a break. You know what I mean? Every time. And then suddenly we thought, oh, Adams is back. And he got injured after a cup game and he's virtually done for the season. It was horrible. And all these exciting new players were all injured. And it was, and I think at the end of the day, you know, you think the fix are hard, but when you keep hearing he still hadn't won.
Yeah.
And we were all looking to the next batch of fixtures, weren't we? And going, this is where it's got to change, October. We're all looking at this start of the season. This is where it has to change, mate.
We're gonna take a look actually at some of the YouTube narrative during that time as well. I mean, Brooksy, that was a magic moment, wasn't it? At Brentford, a star is reborn. That was when Lloyd Kelly sort of all of a sudden just started to like play the way that we know he can. But we were seeing that there was frustration as well. And look, when you play teams like Arsenal, you do get some kind of reality check, like we mentioned there. So we did go in to the month of October, and yes, it wasn't overly great, with starting with a game against Everton where we got absolutely battered.
Yeah, one of the worst games of the year for me, for sure, because we knew this could be a turning point. At the time, Everton hadn't quite had their deduction yet, and they were actually looking pretty poor. And you thought, right, go here, get something, at least show some positives. And we were absolutely atrocious in the game. And then you're starting to go, ooh, I'm a little bit concerned now, but we could back it up. We could bounce back. We've got a couple of good home games. Home to Wolves, we've got to try and win that. We've got to win that.
Well, after the Everton game, we were in 19th place. So that's the first time that Andoni Iraola entered the relegation zone. And when you're playing a team that's like 4 points above you, the added needle of Gary O'Neill as well, we looked upon it as a must-win game. But look, Wolves got the result. I don't think it was... This sounds so salty and sour. I don't think it was deserved. I think it was a draw.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. I mean, the context of it, we took the lead. We were the better team. I felt we were quite comfortable. They scored a really good goal, right after half-time. And then it was quite in the balance, and Lewis Cook got sent off for a bit of stupidity, which he's more than made up for, by the way, because he's been sensational since he returned. But he cost us at that moment. And then suddenly you're going, well, we're going to have to take a point now because we've got 10 men for the whole half. And I didn't really think they troubled us. And I thought, this is quite comfortable. We're going to see this out as a point. We're lucky we're playing Wolves here because they're not going to hurt us. And Neto gives them a goal.
Yeah.
An individual error again. And you're going, is this just not going to work? Because everything from injuries, results, performances, sendings off, individual errors is just happening every week now. And yeah, it's looking a bit worrying now. And I did feel like if we don't beat Burnley in the next game, they might pull the trigger.
Yeah, that's right. And it's... One thing that, like, from the outside looking in, if you're, you know, all you're doing is you're looking at the league table and you're looking at the sort of results that we're getting. You're not maybe taking into account the types of teams you're playing. So there were a lot of calls for Andoni Iraola to have the sack.
I'm thinking of the favourite on the bookies and that.
But then when you do lose to Everton, who were rock bottom, like you say, and then Wolverhampton Wanderers, maybe those opinions can be backed up. So it was so vital that we got something. And we're just looking at now some of the YouTube thumbnails that we were putting out at the time as well. And we were wondering sort of, you know, whether it's improved.
Yeah.
We were looking at some of the performances that we had.
We're head in hands in most of the thumbnails, I think, mate. It was
I mean, look at that. Pathetic.
Matoma again, we said, you know, didn't we, at Brighton? And then, like you say, after that, it was into the Gary Neal stuff and we couldn't believe it. And
we
then
were looking
to
lay the blame at someone. So look at that thumbnail. Whose fault is this?
Yeah, it was worrying time, mate. And and it was all down to this Burnley game. And I still think now we don't ever know, and they would never say so, but sliding doors moment. I said it to you before, mate. Jay Rodriguez were 2-1 up in the game and he scores last kick to look like he's equalised and he was just offside. Mm. If he's a toenail back, if he trimmed his toenails in that morning or whatever, he could have got a late point and we could have pressed the panic button. Mm. I genuinely think it was that big of a sliding doors moment. And Billiam with a bit of quality, wanted to lob the keeper. And then we were going into November thinking, right, now we've got that win under our belts. Now everyone relax.
Yeah.
Everyone relax. We can do this. We're playing. We beat Burnley. This off our that burden's off now. Mm. We'll see what we can do. But
it did seem like, you know, that Burnley game. Just thinking about it. I mean, look, this is how the table was after that game.
We weren't brilliant against Burnley either.
No, we weren't. And it was a wonder goal that won it. So you're feeling like it's a little bit fortuitous. But once you got that, you're thinking, right, let's follow up. Then you look at the fixture list and see, oh, it's in Manchester City away. Mm. Which is, I mean, what can you do? Who scored our goal that day?
Sinisterra.
Was it Luis Sinisterra?
Off the bench, yeah. Because Jane Anthony was in the crowd.
Yeah, was that a 4-1 or something?
Oh, 4-5, I think, yeah. And obviously the cup game as well, just before that, was Liverpool. So, but I think, weirdly, that cup game against Liverpool, I remember being at that game, that's a lot of positives. We played all right. Then City, we've done all right for half hour, but it is what it is. And then you go, okay, we're playing a good team in Newcastle, obviously, but they've got a few injuries. Let's see how we can do now. Let's see if we could bounce up. Our last home league game was a win. And that was a massive moment. We were brilliant. I mean, 2-0 absolutely flattered them.
Really.
Nick Pope
did.
Was the best player on the pitch by a mile. We could have won by 5. But clean sheet, 2-0 win. And then you go, right, Sheffield United now feels like a 6-pointer. If we win there, now it's looking good. Now it's looking good. And we absolutely murdered Sheffield United. Yeah. Murdered them. Both them games, we could have been double figures for goals. It was a shame we only got 5 in them two. But it was a real turning point then. Really, really was a turning point, I felt.
So when we did our YouTube videos, we actually did a Premier League show that said, let's all laugh at Gary. That's not us saying that, but that's what the media were doing at Gary O'Neill's misfortune, should we say, when he was getting all the wrong decisions, but he was starting to turn it around. The game plan that Howe couldn't handle. three worst teams. Do you remember when we did that? And that was the thing that we were saying throughout the whole of the kind of, you know, August, September, October, and from sort of mid-November onwards, after that Newcastle game, we've never really said that. Because we have been looking up, and we said, something is happening, Iola ball has arrived, and it had.
I think, and I think the three teams worse kind of narrative that everyone was saying is Bournemouth might be all right because there's three teams worse. I think that's because we just went through it there, and it's just kind of brought it all back, that we took ages to win a game. And then we followed it up by getting battered to City. But we were not out of it at all. We were out of the relegation zone. We won one game.
Yeah.
And that's when you realise that we've got rid of these horrible fixtures and we're just starting to get the philosophy a little bit and the way we want to play. And we're not even in it.
No.
We're out of the relegation zone. So that's why I think we felt we're still, even playing badly and not winning games, we're better than three teams. So surely it's only going to get better. And fortunately it did, mate. And we're going into December.
Oh. I mean, look at these results. Look at the, you know, just ignore the last one. Ignore the last
31st one. 31st as well.
Yeah, but, I mean, 2 all over Villa.
Should have won.
We should have won the game.
Should have been Villa. Last minute, great header from Watkins. Should have won that. Martinez, man of the match. Went to Palace, controlled it, never looked like conceding.
No.
Went to Man U, actually battered them. went to Forest, and I don't actually think we were great at Forest, no, but we found a way to win against 10 men, you know, a different kind of way, and we still, Dom Solanke masterclass. Fulham absolutely wiped the floor of them.
They didn't have a sniff, really, did they?
No, and out of all them games, the game we had the most shots in was at Tottenham.
Was it 24 shots?
24 shots, yeah. I think they had 12, so yeah, I think we doubled Tottenham's shots.
Only four of them were on target.
Yeah, yeah, it was clinicality in both boxes, wasn't it? We didn't have our shooting boots on, they did. But
they were blocking everything.
Yeah, really good signs, so it doesn't feel like anything's kind of tailed off. We were good in the game, so yeah, and now you're looking at it and it's all looking pretty rosy.
Well, so this is how we started December in the league table. Jesus. So we were 16th with 13 points. We were looking over our shoulder, and then look at that for and that's how things can change. It's almost the equivalent of Gary O'Neill's April. We just, you know, kept on winning. That, yes, there's the result chucked in the last game, but now with a game in hand,
you've got to remember that game in hand.
25 points, and we're on course for our best ever Premier League season. The best ever being 46 points, ninth place.
Yeah,
points wise, I think we'll certainly do better. Maybe not positionally, but points wise,
I
certainly think we will. Yeah. So it's been a roller coaster year,
but very successful, mate.
For AFC Bournemouth, but very successful. And is the media narrative on AFC Bournemouth now changing? Because it feels like, I mean, I don't know if you saw Match of the Day on New Year's Eve.
I've seen it back. Yeah.
They did 6 minutes of analysis. Mm-hmm. Now, 6 minutes sounds like nothing. For Match of the Day, that's quite a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot, yeah.
Because usually, if you play a big side like Spurs, it'll be all about Spurs. Yeah. And then at the end, you know, Bournemouth huffed and puffed, but they gave it a good go.
Yeah.
Right, next. Like, and they covered six. And Paul Robinson, I think, did a really good job, by the way. It was Manish Basin and him. And they were chewing the fat over the performance. And they were dissecting everything that we do, which I think is something that now I don't quite like. I like it when we fly under the radar. But now there are Guardian articles about it. And there's articles in The Independent. People are suddenly noticing the type of football that we're playing. But it's... It must be heartening for those who chose to pull the trigger on O'Neill and get Iriola in that actually is now working.
Yeah, no, I agree, mate. And yeah, we're probably less under the radar, but I think in terms of other teams and the players and knowing how we play, I think they do a lot of work nowadays. Mm. I don't think that would have changed too much. We all know how meticulous Eddie Howe is, for example. They would have done so much work on Iriola and Bournemouth and we'd be in 2-0 comfortably. So that won't change too much. But it's nice to see them start noticing the way we're playing and how exciting it is, and that we're going for teams, and it's positive, man. Nice to get a bit of that. But I think also they're just starting to work out and see that okay, it's a complete change of style, and that's what Bournemouth obviously wanted to do. But yeah, it's good fun. Been a really good year. I think we wanted to. The important thing of this year was to stay up. We done that, and then it was to try and progress for the remainder going into next season. That's what we did.
I must admit, on the way back from Spurs on New Year's Eve, I felt a little bit weird. Like, God, this is what it feels like. And I sort of remembered that feeling of losing, and it actually really hurt.
I felt quite good.
Did you? I didn't feel too good about that.
Just in the sense that, I mean, obviously we're always going to lose at some point. We've got a ridiculous amount of games without losing. We've got more points than I ever expected in the month. But the feeling of we were bloody good again. Mm. We were still good. We didn't, you know, I thought, nah, this is really going places now. And you know, that might just be a little bit of a kick up of them going, look, you play well again, boys. You know, this is still working. We just got beat 3-1. Yeah. That's the difference in this league. You've got to be clinical. It's the one game where, say, Dom and a few others didn't have their shooting boots on, and we've got beat 3-1. So that's a nice little wake up call to them that as much as you're putting in really good performances, we've still got to finish our dinner, lads.
Yeah.
It was positive for me. And knowing we've got a nice like little cup game now and then a little bit of a breather. And I'm looking at the fixtures now, which are difficult, obviously, because it's kind of that return to what we start the season with. And I'm going Liverpool at home, the top of the league, by the way.
Yeah.
Flying, really. And I'm thinking, well, we can beat them. And I genuinely think that. They won't have Salah. Yeah. They won't have Endo. They'll come to our place. We beat them when we were a lot worse. They're top of the league, and I think they know that this is going to be a really difficult game for them. So, yeah, I'm excited for that. All the games coming up, I feel like we're going to be in them all. And that's just a really nice feeling. And I know when I'm going to the game, I'm going to enjoy it.
Do you notice this? This is my water bottle, mate. This is one of my New Year's resolutions. I'm going to try to make sure I drink 2 litres of water a day, albeit this is squash, right? I'm terrible at drinking water. I'm all about my coffees. And you know what else I'm doing, mate?
What? I'm so bored.
Dry January.
I'm so bored. We've only got 2 games, to be fair.
Like, this is the ideal month. Look, if anyone catches me with a pint...
It'll be non-alcoholic.
Yeah.
No, but you do. You might have a non-alcoholic... Can you have a non-alcoholic? You can still have a non-alcoholic one, can't you?
Yeah, I'll have a non-alcoholic Guinness.
Yeah, you like them anyway, yeah, so it'll be fine. Like it, so I'm not doing dry January.
Okay. We asked you on Twitter, what were your highlights of 2023? Some really good varied opinion. You can see it scrolling up the screen now. But we're going to answer each question as well, independently as well. So we asked for, Tom, best signing. I would say that there could be a recency bias,
of course,
with regards to this one. And you may get hints of that as the tweets scroll up the screen. Yeah, you seeing that? Yeah, I'm seeing it. But who is your signing of 2023, the calendar year?
Yeah, so there's 2 windows then, isn't there? So the January window and then the one in the summer. I think what you're alluding to there is that there's players that probably will end up being it. So say Alex Scott. But I don't think you can claim he is at the moment for how many minutes he's had. I personally think it's between two. I'm going to just go for Zabani. I think with Kelly's injuries and all the kind of problems, you know, whether he's going to stay and stuff, we need him to step up. He didn't play a lot last season, but I think it's the first time I've put it this way. I think we've signed a player for 20, 25 million quid. There's no way he's leaving for any less. He could be another Ake, go for a lot of money, go to a big, big club. And I don't see any others, obviously Scott, but like I say, the reasons why I haven't given it to him. So I'm going to just pip Zabani, but I reckon you'll know who the other one I was close to is. Who would you say?
Yes, I'm going to say Antoine Semenyi.
Yeah, that was my next shout.
I think he's been brilliant.
Yeah,
he's a player that you sort of when we've been in this situation before, we've signed young players from the Championship. Sometimes they've stepped up, sometimes they haven't. More often than not, they probably haven't, and then we've ended up loaning them out. He's brilliant.
Yeah,
you know, he can play on either flank. He's got a left foot. He's a right footed. He's got a goals. Direct runner. Yep. He's a bully. Yep. For me, Antoine Semenyi.
Yeah, fair.
Okay. Best home game of the calendar year, mate?
That's quite easy in terms of, I think. I want to make a shout for Newcastle this season because we were brilliant. If we'd hung on against Villa, that might have been it. But I think because of the needle, because of how important it was at the time, I'm going to go for smashing Leeds.
Oh, yeah.
Battering Leeds. We absolutely destroyed them. And at the time, my favourite Bournemouth player was Jefferson Lerma, and he got 2. And it was just, I remember just thinking, not only is that, will we fine?
Yeah.
They ain't going to be. Yeah. And it was lovely. So I'm going to go for Leeds.
For me, I'm going to say Liverpool at home.
Okay.
Because I just really didn't expect it. I turned up to the game not expecting it.
Okay.
At the time, they were all right in the league. Their form was pretty good. And, you know, I didn't feel like we get the points. And then especially when we gave away the penalty, what a bonus it was that he missed. But for me, probably the feeling after beating Liverpool was... Okay. But then, that 4-1, I mean, it was party time against Leeds. We had our rally flags, whatever they're called, rally towels flying around.
I think there'll be, obviously, I haven't looked, but I think that the Leeds that I mentioned, the Liverpool you mentioned, and then the mention of Newcastle this season, I think that'll be the 3 that most say.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to think. We have had some other good ones. I think both against Fulham. We had 2 at home to Fulham this year, 1 and both. They were both pretty key as well. So, yeah, that's some good ones, mate.
Best away game. I mean, there's 2, I think.
Oh, there's 2.
I mean, you could go 3.
Oh, what, if you chuck in Scum?
Yeah.
Yeah, just for...
No, Southampton. I'm not going to have them call the Scummers. Scum.
For me, it's probably... Don't get me wrong, Tottenham was incredible and how vital it was, but we've just went to Old Trafford and won 3-0. It wasn't... We didn't score a last minute... Yeah. For the limbs...
The limbs were Spurs.
If you said limbs, 100% Spurs and moment and all that stuff. But if you say the best match, we just tore United apart in that second half. I'm going Man United.
Oh.
I'm going Man United. It was so
good. I'm going to go... you know what? I'm going to say Spurs because I didn't feel there was any tension at United, which is
that
more
shows
credit.
The quality.
Well, exactly, it does. So I can see your point on that. But I think for that individual moment, perhaps there should be a best moment category.
Yeah, yeah.
In which case, I'd probably agree that then. But you'd just be different
in terms of
Spurs.
In terms of kind of one extreme to the other, would be the 2 aways that we've had this year against Palace. Yeah. One of the worst away games I've ever seen. When we lost 2-0, we were on the beach. Yeah. We were hideous. Yes. Don't think we had a shot. Then this year, we went there and just walked past them and just was just like chilling all game. It was great. So, yeah,
What was your best goal of the calendar year 2023? Best goal.
So I'm going to do it as for quality, because I think you could easily say Dango for the reasons you just mentioned.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
But in, and I think we had some good ones. Tav at home against Fulham. Worldie. I think Billings deserves a mention for the Burnley one.
Yeah.
But I'm actually really recent. I think Dom Solanke's winner against Forest, that header, I think is a sensational header. You can also mention Sinisterra in against Fulham. But I think when you put it all into context, so obviously Dango, you would go, that was a good goal, but you go, it's because of the context behind it. It's the last kick of the game. Yeah. You can say that with Billings as well. It's a good goal, but it's also the context. I think with Solanke, he's got both in terms of it's an unbelievable header. It's a hat trick.
Yeah.
And it's won us the game in the last kick. I'm going to go for Dom Solanke's at Forest.
I'm just looking through the games that we played.
I'll tell you what, we mentioned it briefly earlier. Vigne's goal against Chelsea was very, very good.
Yeah, very good.
For a goal.
And also his goal at Spurs was pretty good, where he nipped forward. Mm. I suppose for a technique and it coming out of nothing, Philip Billing.
Against Burnley.
That's what I'm going to go for.
It's a couple of good, snazzy headers in there. I like Billing's header against United as well.
Yeah.
So, we scored some good goals, maybe. Yeah, I'm just going to go for Dom.
Okay. Most consistent performer for you?
Okay, so I think this player is going to go in the next category for a lot of people, which is unsung hero.
I'm putting
him in most consistent.
You're going to put the same as me then?
Adam Smith.
Oh, no.
I'm going Adam Smith because I think people are putting him in unsung hero, right? A lot of people, because of how he's doing at the moment. I think even when last season he didn't have a great game, he's still six.
He's
consistent as hell. He doesn't. Yeah. He's just so reliable, and I think people are starting to see it now. But we've said this on enough shows that the way he was being asked to play under the previous couple of managers is why he didn't look as good because we had Vigne or Zamora bombing on that left, so they went, Adam, you got to tuck in and make it a three. He was playing as a back three a lot of the time. Now, we were just going to do what he used to do. He's brilliant at it. I think Adam Smith has had the least amount of poor games. I think he's our most consistent.
I mean, you could say Dom Solanke is.
You could, but I think when you say most consistent, you need more goals from him at the start of the year for a striker.
Okay.
He's doing it now, but this is the whole year. Didn't get,
Oh, I think you've swayed me.
Were you going to say Solanke? Is that who you're going to go for?
Well, so, between him and Christie.
Okay, and Christie, we'll just go straight on to the next category, shall we? Christie's my
turn. I'm going to say, am I going to agree with you? Yeah, I think I'm going to have to. Adam Smith. Adam Smith, most consistent performer, but...
No, I'm going to make a change in my head.
The most unsung hero. Who's your unsung hero of 2023?
Marcus Tavernier. I've changed it while doing this video, because we've just went through the start of the year, which is obviously the back end of last season. How many times did we go, that was a crucial win, Tavernier got the goal. That was a crucial win, Tavernier got the goal. You know, Southampton away, Tavernier. Wolves, Tavernier. The Fulham game at home, where we were just talking about it, maybe potentially our best goal, Tavernier. Moments where he bursts away. We said it all, we had that awful run. He came back to fitness.
Yeah.
It changed everything. And then this season, in the way Andoni wants to play, how many times did he leave Tavernier out?
Yeah, true.
Very rarely, because Tavernier is key to the way we play. He's still one of our best players. He was one of our best players at the start of the year. I'm gonna go Tavernier for it, because I think people still look at, you know, because you want a new signing in this year. I think people look at different bits and he don't get the credit anymore. But I think also he plays left, plays right, fills in at left back. I'm going Marcus Tavernier.
I'm caught between two, Marcus Senesi.
Yeah,
now there was a spell where he wasn't playing, and there was a couple of performances that were, I would say, below par, but he scored some crucial goals. I mean, one of them at Arsenal didn't, you know, count for nothing, but
he pops up.
But the celebration for anything, the knee slide, Newcastle at home, you know, putting us on, you know, setting us up for you know, a good result there.
Called Old Trafford.
Yeah.
It's got some assists as well.
However, Ryan Christie.
Yeah, I guess.
I think I'm going to go for Ryan. Now, he did. I thought he was played in a position that I suppose meant that we were venting our frustrations a fair bit at the start of the year. But I think the level of his performances, even this season alone, makes me put him in this category for the whole of 2023. And his work rate is just phenomenal. He's such an engine. Yes, he doesn't pop up with the numbers, but wow.
What I'm going to bring up there as well is at the start of the year, we signed Dango Batara, Hamed Traore, Antoine Semenya. And I think most of us, I definitely did, went, well, Christie's done. And I remember them first few games after we signed them players in January, Christie couldn't make the bench.
Yeah.
He wasn't making our bench. You thought he's done at Bournemouth. So the recovery, how he's, and Salah being one of our crucial central midfield players is incredible. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, he's got to get a shout out somewhere, mate. So I'm glad you gave him it. I just wanted to make an offer to Tav, but yeah, Christie, unbelievable.
And have you, I mean, this is putting you on the spot somewhat. It was on the tweet, but have you got a review in five words? I suppose this can be how you feel now.
Okay.
It can be how you feel of the whole 2023.
Five words.
I'm going to start and say good managerial decisions all round.
Yeah, that's good because it means both of them. Yeah, yeah. I like that. I'm going to go progress isn't possible without change. There you go.
That's pretty beautiful.
Whether you've got to, if you want to progress, you've got to change something.
Yeah.
You've got to change. And we looked at it in the season when we changed Scott Parker for Gary Neil. It worked. Right, we want to kick on again, so we're changing it again. Even though people will think, "What? Keep changing, change the style." We were too let teams come to us last season. No, let's keep going up.
And you know, and like people are noticing, people are noticing. The media are noticing now, and I do feel as though there's a kind of like a barometer of success that the media kind of look at when you know if Liverpool you know win three games in a row. You know, it don't really matter, but you know, they will be absolutely, you know, cooed over. If Bournemouth do, yeah, that's good. But it seems to be like if they want to see that like things are really changing, they want to see that Bournemouth have won like five in a row or something like that,
yeah.
or they've got a really good points return from, and exactly, you know, results like that really, like really do help. But now it feels like it's not just, it feels like Andonia's proven, despite the loss at Spurs, it's not just a blip.
Yeah,
and there is some real identity and vision to what we're trying to do here. So it feels as though that, you know, we've got a limitless ceiling here and we don't really know what we can get to.
Yeah, exactly. And we're
European football, probably not this season.
Probably not this season, but it's something that we can look at now, and it'll be nice to bring out the receipts of, I think, Richard Keys, I think Graham Souness on TalkSport. They said, what are Bournemouth doing? Because they're trying to progress. There is no progression for Bournemouth. They said, Bournemouth is staying in the league. There is no other world. But your AFC Bournemouth, stay in your lane. I'll get them receipts out soon.
Get your receipts out. Look, it's been a pleasure bringing this show to you. Thanks so much for watching. Loads of content on the way. You know what you can do if you haven't already, yeah?
Like, bell, subscribe. Do it all now.
Thanks so much. And look, just appreciate all the support and stuff we've been getting from you throughout the season. It's been absolutely glorious. We'll see you in the next one. Up the Cherry.
We got a penalty this year as well. Yes, come on.
There were limbs for that.
Oh my God, we didn't get a penalty the whole year before, did we?
No, just
unbelievable.
Billy, left footed, it's a cheeky one. Square!
Podcast Network.